Hello, teachers' pets. How is everybody today, or tonight, or whenever you're listening? This is your January bonus episode. And tonight, we're going to talk about something you may have heard of. It's called the Supermax Prison in Colorado in the United States. And I've always been curious about it, so I decided to look into it and found that it is pretty interesting. And you would probably enjoy hearing about it, so I made it a bonus episode. Its real name is the Federal Correctional Complex, or FCC Florence. It is 108 miles from Denver, and it covers 49 acres. So it's not just one building, it's actually a complex. And it has three buildings. There's USP Florence, which is a high security prison. FCI Florence, which is medium security. And USP Florence ADMAX, that stands for Administrative Security Maximum Prison. That is the one we're going to talk about today. That is the infamous one. And this prison is known all over the world. It's supposed to be like the most miserable prison to be in. The buildings were built in 1994 and opened in January of 1995. They consist of all male inmates. The ADMAX, as of November of last year, meaning like 2 months ago, had 332 inmates. USP Florence has 912, and FCI Florence has 1,224. And they have an adjacent minimum security camp at which there are 124 inmates. The complex is located kind of pretty much in the middle of nowhere, like they intended. It's on Highway 67 in an unincorporated area. It's called the Alcatraz of the Rockies. It was designed to hold inmates who pose extreme security threats. And it's the only prison specially designed to keep every occupant in near total solitary confinement. So there is a story of why exactly this was built. On October 22nd, 1983, in USP Marion, which is a federal prison in Illinois, at that time, they sent the worst of the worst inmates there. So there was an inmate named Thomas Silverstein and another inmate named Clayton Fountain. They were both members of the Aryan Brotherhood prison gang. They fatally stabbed correctional officers Merrill Cutts and Robert Hoffman. And how they do that, listen to how they did this. This is crazy. And it had to have been rehearsed. One of the inmates was walking down the hall with his hands cuffed in front of him, which I don't know about prisons, but in law enforcement, they say never do that. And you're about to find out why in a minute. So he's walking, he's got his hands cuffed in front of him. Suddenly he turned and shoved his cuffed hands into the cell of another inmate. Like I said, this was prearranged, who unlocked the cuffs with a stolen key and handed him a shank, you know, a homemade knife. So this inmate turned around and stabbed the CO. Later that same day, the same pattern was used to kill another CO. So they pulled that off twice in one day. And in that prison, if there was some kind of trouble, they put the whole prison on lockdown. And that is when assaults and murders happen more than, you know, like any other day. So they changed this prison to all lockdown as like a test for Supermax. And Norman Carlson, who was then the director of the Bureau of Prisons, persuaded the government to build a new and different prison. He said, quote, "These two characters had multiple life sentences. Another life sentence is no deterrent," unquote. So they picked this location in Colorado in 1994, and two leading architectural firms in Colorado Springs designed it, and it opened on January 10th, 1995. Like I said, they are all men there, and any women who are classified as special management concern are housed at the Federal Medical Center in Carswell, Fort Worth, Texas. Like I said, this prison is kind of infamous around the world for being the only place where inmates are in almost permanent solitary confinements. And not surprisingly, this has been criticized by mental health professionals and human rights advocates. It's been said that the prison is designed to make inmates docile and drive them mad. Colin Dayan, who is a professor who studies high-security prisons, said, quote, "You are staring upon nothingness, concrete, all the time. The architecture itself is the form of the torture," end quote. And a prison expert named Dr. Craig Haney said that long-term solitary confinement can have devastating effects on inmates. And it said that inmates can become depressed, lethargic, sleep a lot, and not wanting to go out and exercise. And supposedly this can lead to memory loss, loss of concentration, and panic attacks. There have actually been many inmates who went on hunger strikes in the prison to protest about what they considered harsh treatment. Remember Ian Brady tried that shit? And surprisingly, about the only people who did this were foreign terrorists. By 2007, there were 900 cases of inmates having to be force-fed. Nathan just came in. Nate Dogg is in the house. In May of 2012, the family of Jose Martin Vega filed a lawsuit against the U.S. District Court alleging that Vega committed suicide while incarcerated there because he was deprived of treatment for mental illness. And the following month, 11 prisoners filed a class action lawsuit against the Federal Bureau of Prisons, alleging that mentally ill prisoners were being mistreated. According to the complaint, these prisoners cut themselves with razors, shards of glass, sharpened chicken bones. Albert Fish did that, if you remember that, but yeah. Writing utensils, etc. Supposedly, they swallowed razor blades, nail clippers, broken glass, etc. Some would like to smear their poop on the wall, which is not unique to ADX. So this suit was settled in December of 2016. The Bureau of Prisons revised their policies regarding mental health diagnosis and treatment of inmates and implemented better screening, availability of psychotropic drugs, and visits by mental health professionals. At least 8 inmates have committed suicide in there. And Robert Hood, the warden at ADX from 2002 to 2005, described life at ADX as, quote, "As soon as they come through the door, you see it in their faces. That's when it really hits you. You're looking at the beauty of the Rocky Mountains in the backdrop. When you get inside, that is the last time you will ever see it. The Supermax is life after death. It's long term. In my opinion, it's far worse than death," unquote. Nobody has ever escaped from ADX. It's surrounded by 12-foot-high razor wire fences, patrolled by heavily armed guards, guard dogs, motion detectors, and cameras everywhere. And it has 1,400 remote control steel doors inside. If an escape or any kind of shenanigans is even suspected, the officers can hit a panic button, which immediately closes every door in the building. The prison is designed so inmates can only see the sky and roof, So they don't know exactly where in the building they are, meaning they can't plan an escape. It is meant to totally disorient people so that they literally don't know where they are or where they're going or anything. They're taken to their cells by an underground corridor from the lobby. The cells are soundproof, 7 by 12 feet, and they each have a bed, desk, stool, and a shelf, all made of concrete. There is a, I guess you could call it thin mat or mattress that sits on the bed. Doesn't look very comfortable at all. And of course, you have your combination steel sink and toilet in there, and a single window, 3 feet high and 4 inches wide. So that's all they get to see of the outside, like just sky. An inmate is usually in there for 23 hours out of the day, and they get 1 hour of recreation out in this tiny yard. The staff are carefully chosen, and they have little or no daily contact with the inmates. The inmates get their meals through a slot in the door, and the meals consist of protein, carbs, vegetable, fruit, and a beverage. Interestingly, the toilet is designed to shut off if it's blocked. Some inmates like doing that on purpose, like plugging the toilet with paper or other stuff, and that makes a flood, and they get a big kick out of this. And their showers are in the cell. The showers run on a timer to prevent flooding. For the first 3 years that somebody is in ADX, they have absolutely no contact with anybody. If they behave, they are gradually integrated to socialize with other inmates, and they get rewards. In their last year there, they can be out of their cell from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. and eat in the dining room. I thought this one was crazy, and I'm having a hard time understanding how this would be possible, but when a CO opens the cell door, they hide the key with an aluminum shield because supposedly some inmates can glance at the key, memorize the configuration and the size of the teeth, and then later duplicate it from materials that they find around the prison. I don't know if that happened one time, and that's why they started doing that, because it seems like such a specific thing. But anyway, everything is brought to the inmate cell. Their food, books. They do have a radio and a small TV in there. And on their TVs, they have classes on psychology, education, anger management, parenting, and literacy. Also, and I'm thinking this is probably like an earned thing. I don't think you start out with this. They have 50 mainstream channels and Netflix. Religious services are piped into the cells from the chapel. And they are allowed out for very limited things, like a legal visit, medical treatment, visits to the law library. The COs monitor all of their mail, books and magazines and newspapers, phone calls, and visits. Many inmates are under what they call special administrative measures, or SAM, to prevent the spread of classified information that could endanger national security or lead to acts of violence or terrorism. If an inmate demonstrates good conduct and adjustment and participates in any programs, they are allowed to move to a less restrictive unit in which they get more exercise time, additional phone privileges, and more TV channels. In 2006, the Olympic Park bomber, describe him in more detail later, Eric Rudolph, contacted the Gazette of Colorado Springs and in a series of letters basically whined and bitched about how miserable it is in prison. He described the conditions as, quote, meant to inflict misery and pain, and said it is a closed-off world designed to isolate inmates from society and environmental stimuli, with the ultimate purpose of causing mental illness and chronic physical conditions. You ready for this? It's fucking ridiculous. Such as diabetes, heart disease, and arthritis, end quote. I really have no idea how being in prison can make you at risk for any of those, especially arthritis. I mean, I have that, and I'm pretty sure it's hereditary. I've never been in prison. When an inmate comes in, they are put in one of six different sections, depending on their crimes and their criminal history. And these are GenPop, general population, also called Delta, Echo, Fox, and Golf, the special housing unit. Then there is the special security unit called H unit. This one is for terrorists. There is a control unit. There is an intermediate transitional unit. Well, there's two of them. They're called Kilo and Joker. These are the step-down units, like people who are kind of nearing the end of their sentences, like a reward. They're less secure. And Range 13, which is the most secure and isolated. It's a four-wing cell off of the special housing unit. The two most secluded and isolated units are the control unit and Range 13. The average sentence that inmates do is 36 years. Over half of the inmates here have killed somebody, and one-third are in prison gangs, such as the Aryan Brotherhood, the Black Guerrilla Family, and the Mexican Mafia. And the reason that's important is in prison, gangs are a very, very big problem. And what the COs want to do in any prison or jail is they probably have this in computers or books or something, like how many gangs are there, how many members are they, how many members, where do they come from, which ones don't get along, so that they don't put like members of rival gangs in the same cell or even close to each other. Because I'm taking a guess at this, I didn't read this anywhere, but I have a feeling most of the violence in prison is rival gangs, you know, messing with each other. The people, kind of inmates who come to ADX are inmates from other prisons who have killed other inmates or COs, people who are a threat to national security. This would be terrorists and spies, gang leaders, people who committed, or I guess I should say men, because they all are men, men who have committed high-profile crimes, and organized crime leaders. As of 2022, the only inmates publicly known to have been in Range 13, remember that's like, ADX is like the worst of the worst for prisons, and Range 13 is like the worst of the worst in the worst of the worst. So you can imagine how bad you have to be to get on Range 13. But they are Thomas Silverstein, Ramzi Youssef, and I'm going to try this name, Umar Farouk Abdul Mutalib. He is a Nigerian terrorist. He's known as the underwear bomber or the Christmas bomber because on December 25th of 2009, he tried to detonate plastic explosive, which was in his underwear, hence the name underwear bomber, on a Northwest air flight from Amsterdam to Detroit. At one time, there was one cell block called Bomber's Row because of the five famous bombers kept there. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, he's dead now. Timothy McVeigh of Oklahoma City bombing fame, he's also dead. Terry Nichols, that was Tim's partner in the Oklahoma City thing. Eric Rudolph and Ramzi Youssef. Despite the high security, there has been a murder there. And this is another thing that I'm having a hard time picturing how this went on. It just, knowing how secure this place is, it's like, how did this happen? Somebody really fucked up that day. On April 21st, 2005, Sylvester Riviera and Richard Santiago were left unsupervised in the prison yard, which, like I said, that's the strange part. Like, how does this happen? And killed Manuel Torres, who was a member of the Mexican Mafia. The murder, in which Riviera and Santiago beat and stomped Torres to death, was caught on tape. Santiago is still at the ADX, and Rivera was moved to USP Hazleton in West Virginia. So, this is probably the most interesting part, or I bet that you're thinking that what you really want to know is, okay, who is there or who has been there? So I will highlight some. There's way too many, obviously, to talk about them all, but I will tell you a few highlights of the most notorious inmates. Foreign terrorists. Zacharias Musawi, and I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. I know he's a terrorist, but I still like to pronounce things right. He was a French citizen. He's serving 6 consecutive life sentences. He was an Al-Qaeda operative who played a key role in the September 11th attacks. He helped the actual hijackers get flight lessons, money, and other stuff that they used. Ramzi Youssef, he is from Pakistan. He's doing life plus 240 years. In 1994, he was convicted of helping in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Richard Reed of the UK, he's probably more often known as the shoe bomber. He's doing 3 consecutive life sentences plus 110 years. He is also an operative of Al-Qaeda. And in 2001, he was on a plane from Paris to Miami, and some wonderful, awesome, heroic, I think it was a flight attendant, caught him messing around with his shoe, and he had an explosive device hidden in his shoe that he was trying to detonate. We have domestic terrorists there, like the aforementioned Eric Rudolph. He's doing 4 consecutive life sentences. He's a member of the Christian extremist group, Army of God. He planned 4 bombings between 1996 and 1998. He's most noted for the Centennial Olympic Park bombing in Atlanta. Terry Nichols, he's doing 161 consecutive life sentences. He was charged with conspiracy in the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. His partner, Tim McVeigh, who the same, but he was actually given the death penalty for that. He was executed in 2001. This name here, bear with me. I'm usually pretty good with names, but Dzhokhar, D-Z-H-O-K-A-R. Tsarnaev, he was sentenced to death, but that sentence was overturned, but reimposed in 2022. In 2013, him and his brother, Tamerlan, who died in a shootout with the police, set off a bomb at the Boston Marathon in Boston. Then, believe it or not, there are some spies. A couple, I just have one here, is Peter Debbins. He's doing 15 years and 8 months. He's actually scheduled for release December 28th of 2033. He was a former Army Special Forces officer, which obviously is a very high position. And what he did is such a shitty thing for somebody of that caliber. In 2021, he was convicted of conspiring to provide Russian intelligence operatives, or spies in the common vernacular, with U.S. national defense information and organized crime, mobsters. There are actually a lot of them in there. One of them is Joaquin Guzman. He's also known as El Chapo. He's serving life plus 30 years. He was the leader of the Sinaloa cartel. He was extradited from Mexico to the U.S., and what he had his nose in was drug trafficking, money laundering, and murder. Some other miscellaneous people. Alan Hurley, he's doing life while serving a 37-year sentence for an armed bank robbery in USP Canaan. He stabbed and killed his cellmate, Joseph O'Kane, who was in the Gambino crime family. And finally, we have Michael Swango. He's doing 3 consecutive life sentences. He was a doctor and serial killer who fatally poisoned 4 patients. And strangely, he is at ADX at his own request for safety concerns. I can't imagine anybody wanting to actually do their time at this place. So that is January's bonus episode. Let me know. Nathan is sitting here grunting. I hope you can't hear him. Get down, please. Let me know if you like this, what kind of topics you would like for the monthly bonuses. Do you want like something informative like this or something funny or I don't know. Just let me know. Okay? Class dismissed.